This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 154, recorded on February 6th, 2014. Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from a very cold AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. And we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show via email. Just send me one, jim@theAverageGuy.tv. Or you can find me on Twitter, just @JCarlson. Or if you have questions, you can call the show. Now, 402, and it's a U.S. number, sorry, Andrew, but 402-478-8450. Give us a call and leave a message. I'd even take a crank call at this point. So if you want to call in and, you know, ask me if my refrigerator's running or something like that, that would be fine. Give us a call, 402-478-8450. Give us a ring there. Leave a message. Question for the show. We'll play that here on the show. You get a good way to get on if you're a regular listener, and if you got a question you'd like us to answer, that'd be great. And we're now using a brand new chat wing for our chat service out there. You can log in with Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Yahoo, and chat wing. You can even do Tumblr too, but I did not enable that. If you let me know if you want that done. You can also just log in as a guest. We also have a Live 2 option that fits your screen better if you're using a Surface or an iPad. That I know not too many people use iPads, but and no, I'm just kidding, of course. And the chat, and we have a chat-only page as well. Just go to theAverageGuy.tv/chat if you want to listen on two devices, maybe a phone and a phone. Get the podcast going on one and the chat going on the other, although that works really well on a tablet device. So should be good for just about any device, although not all mobile devices will allow you to watch the live YouTube and chat at the same time. So we're still working on that. All navigation is found in the upper right-hand corner out at theAverageGuy.tv. All right, I got a couple guys with me that haven't podcasted with me in a while, I'll be honest with you. They have been out and about on the road, really busy. They lead busy lives, but I got them both back on at the same time. We'll start in the order of distance, and we'll go farthest to nearest. Of course, all the way across the ocean in Australia. Andrew Morris. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. You're right. It's been a very hectic 7, 8, 9, however many months it's been since I've had an opportunity to be on, so yeah, missing my regular slot, and hoping one day I'm going to be able to get back in it.
Well, they say that nothing ruins podcasting like kids, and you've had a couple, and they're like, I saw pictures of them on Facebook the other day. They are they're growing up fast, my friend.
Yeah, they are. They're I think they're 14 months old now, or 13 months and a half or something. So, yeah look, adjusted age, given they're preemie, they're officially one, even though they were one in December. And, things are about to get real because they're just about to be independently mobile.
Yeah, so we always remember that by, because it was right around Christmas, or was it Christmas?
Yeah, 12-12-12.
12, that's right, 12-12-12. That's an easy way to remember that. And how early were they?
7 weeks.
Okay. Okay, yeah, but they're doing well now.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're well ahead of where they should be, given how early they were, and they started swimming lessons last week. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Man, that goes fast. Well, welcome back. Good to have you back on. And then to his right could be your left, Bill Pullman. Bill, how are you? Good to have you back as well.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's always good to have you. We got your microphone working, which is a good thing as well. And the guys were giving you a hard time about the camouflage, so we'll adjust your camera so they can see you back there. But, Bill, what's new with you? What have you been up to? I know you've been working a ton, I bet, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, work's been crazy and doing things in the house. My son's becoming independent, so to speak. He's 3 and a half, and we're redoing the basement. So everything has been doing everything in the house, so I don't have to tell anyone out there that there's no free time for nothing.
Nah, they're really. Once you start remodeling, you know, that's another thing that ruins podcasting is kids and remodeling, right? Because if you're doing it all yourself, you just don't have any time, right? Drywall and paint and carpet, and that's why I don't do any of that stuff.
No, just call someone.
No, I don't even do that.
Leave it alone. The good thing is we have so many good podcasts in our community that. You know, keep you motivated while you're painting and spackling and running plumbing and Cat 6.
For sure. Oh, have you been pulling Cat 6 down to the basement?
Yeah, I actually moved everything into the basement and then ran a home run. I couldn't get it up through the walls, a new home run, so I actually made a electric conduit pipe out from the basement all the way up the chimney chase on the outside of the house into the attic so I can run. Every room gets two lines now.
Okay, so just standard PVC, or what would you use?
It's actually electrical conduit. It's the gray.
Oh, so the gray metal? Or
No, it's plastic, yeah. And if it looks, our siding's gray, and it tucked underneath an inch and a half, so you can get a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, well, cool. Very good. It's one way to get from the basement up to the roof, right, and then drop them down that way.
I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, right. Well, it's difficult, right, to get – sometimes to fish those lines through the house is nearly impossible, right, to get that done. So,
yeah. So you guys still have metal conduit over there?
Yeah, for a lot of industrial applications, it's still all metal.
Okay, because over here it got outlawed in all but real heavy industrial, so 415-volt stuff.
Yeah. No, I don't know the local code. I know I just had some electrical work done down here, and the guy did it in metal. So it's actually I talked about this on the show. I had a fuse go. I had like the whole basement jammed into this one fuse, and it was still the screw-in kinds from like the 50s, you know. And I way overheated that thing, and it actually shorted and burned inside the metal box, and I didn't know it. I mean, because when it. And so the electrician, when he pulled it, he's like, hey, you got a fire in here. And at that point, I was really glad it was in a metal box. And then I felt really stupid that I had almost got the basement on fire. So, yeah, you too can, can do dumb things with electricity. So, you know, we've since had that electrical service upgraded to breakers and had an electrician come in and fix all the jankety stuff. That and even fix some of the jankety stuff that I did. Another reason to get a licensed electrician in for those kinds of things. Well, guys, welcome. I've got a few just a few housekeeping items. Usually I save those to the end, but we got some good stuff that I want to throw in up front just to let you know of a few things that are cooking over at theaverageguy.tv. If you haven't been out there for a while, we're getting ready to completely revamp the site. So I've actually got a kind of a pseudo design already done. I've got a designer working on some new logos, so those are coming here quickly. And then last Friday, Christian and I launched the new Christian's Corner, which we are now calling Cyber Frontiers. And Christian and I kind of laid down the very first podcast. Not available out there yet. I haven't made it. Going to put it in this Home Tech stream. The first five shows we're going to put here in Home Tech. And so you'll get a chance to hear them, and then we'll drop them out. So if you see Cyber Frontiers coming through, the feed, that's what that is. That's the old Christian's Corner. You know, Christian could come on the show and just rant for 30 minutes. Well, instead of doing that, we're now just letting him rant for an hour. No, he doesn't really rant. He does a nice job. Cyber Frontiers is what it's called, and he'll get an opportunity to talk about some of the things that he's doing at the University of Maryland around cybersecurity and big data. Did a really nice job in the first one. I'll try and get that done this weekend and get that out next week. I've had a really busy schedule. Just came back from Los Angeles, so I spent a couple days recruiting at USC, getting and talking to some of USC's finest software developers that they have there. And it's really a great school. They really do a nice job with their software developers there. And so one of the reasons we're there, I see about 200 to 300 students every time in a five-hour career fair there. I get to see a whole bunch of tech students. So it's good because I get to talk nerd with them, and then we always do some kind of presentation. Well, that's what we do, Andrew. We, talk nerd.
Put color on.
Yeah, exactly. And so I got to spend some time in sunny California, which was really nice, 65 and sunny. It was just typical Southern California weather. I was down there. It rained a little bit on the way out, but it was good. And so Cyber Frontiers is coming. Watch for that in the Home Tech feed. I want to warn you up front, just because if you see this, you're like, what the heck? We'll only do four or five in that, and then about the time we kick that out, we'll be changing over to Home Gadget Geeks, and Dave and I, mostly Dave, but we've been working in the background to get the Geeks Network up and running, and so lots of good things going on over there. The Tech Scholarship Fund is in full force. We had another good month last month, and I've got some dollars for you. If you want to test something out for me, let me know. If you've got an item, we've even thought about a traveling item, a bigger one that maybe we buy and ship around. If you can think of one that...
I thought you were going to fly me over to the States so I can have a ski holiday with you.
Oh, that would be good, but it might be fraud.
No, not really. It's called, it's called in transit developmental cost or something like that.
Maybe if we did a podcast live from like Breckenridge, you and me, Andrew, that might fit the tech scholarship fund. Yeah,
over the back of Blackcomb or something like that.
I don't have enough money to do that yet, so keep buying from Amazon if you're here in the United States. And we appreciate those if you buy from Amazon. TheAverageGuy.tv, excuse me, TheAverageGuy.tv/Amazon or Amazon.TheAverageGuy.tv get you there, and we appreciate you doing that. And I've had a couple really good months, and so keep that up. We appreciate you doing that, and that helps us buy some things to get people situated. I'll talk about with some tech, and then they write about it or come on the show. Speaking of that, one of the things I bought, I want to highlight. Who was I talking to? Did I write this down here? Let's see. Oh, I was talking to Greg Welsh. That's right. And we were talking about Greg just kind of built a brand new studio for himself. And if you go back to last week's podcast. We spent a little time with Chris Barnes, and if you hear Chris often over there at the End User Podcast, Chris came on the show. We talked a little bit about podcasting equipment. I was talking with Greg. He kind of set up a new studio, and one of the things he showed me to get, you know how we all put our cameras on the top of the, on the top of our monitors, and that's always not the greatest place for it. It's maybe not positioned right, or it's not straight on, or it's coming down, or it's looking up, or whatever. Mm. So Greg showed me this Manfrotto, I think it's called Froto? Yeah, Froto. Manfrotto, a clamp. Now, for Christmas, I got one of those dual monitor clamps that's got the center pole on the back, and then it pops out to the two monitors. So this Manfrotto clamp is designed to go right on that center pole. And then it's got one of those quick release right there. It's got one of those quick release that this kind of camera equipment. And Andrew, maybe in some of the camera work you've done, you've seen these connectors.
Looks a bit like a monopod, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right on. Goes right in there. So this will connect right in to the base on this and tighten up. And then actually, when I looked at this thing on Amazon, I really thought it was about this big. When I was looking at the picture, it's a honking, it's a flexible, and then on the end of it is that the piece that you would attach. I have the C920, the Logitech C920, and it's got the mount for the camera and screws in right there, and you can then mount the camera right on top of this. And the thought then is that you clamp this to the center pole, put this in there, and then bring that camera out between your monitors. And put that at eye level, front and center, right between the two monitors so that you can look dead into it as you're podcasting. So the one hang up at this point is I think this is too big. This is like that camera would be like right here, That's
it's sort of a camera. It sort of looks like you'd put a camera on it to put somewhere else as well, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
About the right size.
Colonoscopy, is that kind of what you're talking about?
I wasn't really going to take it quite that way.
Why not? What the heck? But so I think $50 is about 20 bucks for this, and maybe it's 45, 20, 22 each, I think, something for 22 for this and 20 for this. And but an interesting solution, especially from a camera perspective of getting that, if you've got things that you need to mount or they're up out of the way and you want to get them mounted. I recently mounted the lights that I got for Christmas up on the ceiling, and they just hang down. But maybe just a different way of mounting that camera so that it's up and out of the way, or maybe not necessarily sitting right on top of your
you wouldn't want to sit right on top of that.
Say that again?
You wouldn't want to sit right on top of that.
No, you would not want to sit on top of this either side. Andrew, so good to have you back, by the way.
The Average Guy health check.
Yeah. Oh, so, anyways.
Amazon.com.
Pick that up this week. We're building the studio at work as well, and I'm learning some things about connectors, how to get these things, all this equipment connected to various...
so how would you connect a regular webcam to the top of that though?
You couldn't. Yeah, because it's got that connector for the tripod. You could do like a DSLR as well though. If you took the tripod piece, that bottom tripod, where it snaps in. Well, no, the camera's got that connector right there, right? It would just screw right into that thing, and you could just screw
it on like that, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Mind you, my DSLR's DSLR's probably 450 grams. Might be a tad heavy.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. This thing is heavy. I mean, it's heavy duty for this thing. Okay. I mean, that I can't. I think that could sit right on there, and it. I don't know.
It's getting worse.
There's no way we're going to recover from this, are we?
Yeah, just put it away.
Yeah, Bill's like, I'm out. Wow, what did I agree to? All right, well, some interesting equipment there to work on. I'm going to mount the camera to it and try some different configurations and see how that goes. So we'll move on. No, I'm going to ban Microsoft CEO chat. No Microsoft CEO chat. That has been covered ad nauseum by all the various podcasts. You can go to any one of those. We won't be talking about that tonight, so just a warning on that. And then I wanted to...
I've been living under a rock, so I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, you haven't been following it. Huh? Well, we're not going to talk about it, so you have to go read and listen somewhere else. Well. Cool. Say again, Bill.
No, that's me. I was just giggling.
Yeah. I've been doing a podcast show Saturday mornings. So here in the U.S., Saturday mornings, 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern, and called Ask the Podcast Coach with all the podcasting that I've done. Dave Jackson and myself, he's a podcast coach. I've been getting together. Come on out and hear us. We've got a format where you can actually call in and ask your questions. So if you're an aspiring podcaster, you think you want to podcast, you got some questions about podcasting, whatever, jump in there 9:30, go out to schoolpodcasting.com. And that's been a fun little experiment. I've learned a ton about live podcasting. That's all I do, but Dave is new to it, and we've got some good questions, and I've learned a ton. Just some good stuff. It's a great thing to do on Saturday morning, so you can join us for that as well. All right, one more thing. Sorry, last 2 weeks, I just can't seem to, I got a little chest congestion from a cold I had a couple weeks ago. One more thing. So a couple weeks ago, we had a battery show. We covered Power Rocks with Kerry Adams. If you haven't checked that out, head back. Kerry's a friend of mine and now one of the marketing folks over at Power Rocks, and we talked about batteries. I took my Energizer battery with me to L.A. I bought back for CES about 3 years ago, and it's down to about 3/4 of a charge for my phone, so it won't even fully charge it anymore. It has degraded over time, and those are the things that you might want to check if you've purchased batteries in the last couple years and they're sitting in drawers and you haven't used them for a while. Maybe a good idea to pull that thing out and do a little bit of a stress test on it, because mine doesn't work anymore. It still does. It kind of does, but pretty much after about an hour of charging the phone, the red light comes on, and that thing used to maybe charge the phone twice. So it's time to take it to Best Buy and get it recycled. And Battery Rocks has got some good sales going on right now. I'll probably pick up. They've got one that they got a bacon one. It's got a bacon around the outside. It's got pictures of bacon on it. So you get a bacon battery.
I saw that on a.
You saw it on Facebook.
No, it was on a blog. It was on the Cool Materials blog page.
Oh.
Come up the other day. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you head out to our Facebook group, so go to facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. Kerry posted, she said, you guys asked, we listened, and so they have this battery, and the cover is a picture of a bacon. So
I don't get the bacon thing still.
It's a U.S. thing, maybe. I don't know.
Everybody's
crazy about bacon. Are they crazy about bacon in Australia?
There was a packet of crisps in one of the supermarkets the other day, bacon-flavored.
Mm.
I just don't get it. And bacon? They are disgusting. Those chips. Bought them because I needed to see what the paranoia was about. And I just don't get it.
Was that what you were eating before the show?
No. They were hot fried, crispy,
allegedly
deep fried goodness.
Well, I don't know what it is either, but I love bacon. I just can't get enough. Can't get enough of it. We were at a restaurant, so we went out on the other night.
It's bacon, but that stuff's faking. It's not even bacon.
Yeah, that's true. But
there's no pig anywhere near it.
maybe not. We went to this restaurant on Tuesday night, I think it was. Yeah, Tuesday night. And we asked what the specials were, and the gal's like, well, we have these short rib tacos, which I'd never heard of before, right? They had taken the meat off the short ribs and they were making tacos out of that. I was like, okay. So we tried one of those. And then she's like, and then we have, what did they call it? She's like, we have this dish with thick cut bacon. And we kept waiting for something else, you know, like, okay, what else? No, it was just thick cut bacon and you know, some garnish. And I'm like, are you seriously, you're just serving bacon as an entree? Can you do that? Oh,
that's
so
wrong.
Yeah, we almost ordered it just to see what it was like. You know, if you really got like a bacon steak, you know, a steak cut bacon or something like that. I can't imagine that, but
kind of like ham steak with a rind on it.
Hungry.
Something like that. All right, let's do. Yeah, all of a sudden, everybody's like, "Oh, hold on, I'm going to pause the podcast and go get some bacon to eat." So
yeah. In case anyone's just tuning in, you've joined the Average Show Culinary Show.
That's right. Where we talk about it's all bacon all the time. That
and Zocor and any cholesterol medicine.
That's right. Lipitor. We're all in that age category, right? I mean, come on, let's be honest about our demographic. We're all to that point where we're thinking about, oh my God, my cholesterol's 353. I need
just be sure to wash it down with a nice cold can of Coke.
Yeah. Or Blue Moon or something like that. That would be good. Let's talk some tech here. So I've got a battery I need to replace and buy. So I think I'm going to head over to Power Rocks and pick one of those up here. Those are available on Amazon as well. So if you wanted to take, just put Amazon in or put Power Rocks in and Amazon, use the link, and you can pick up a battery. The one that's on sale at Power Rocks, we talked about on the show, is also on sale at Amazon. So you can get that as well. I'm not saying you have to buy it at Amazon. All right, here we go. Andrew, let's start with you. Typically, we'd cover a topic like this on the Home Server Show, but you're barely available for my show. So we'll take a little break and have you on here.
Not only have I pod crashed. Pod crash? Yeah, I'd say fell off the cliff. My Windows Home Server, which has been trusty true for about 4 years, decided to suffer from overheated disk syndrome and totally go out for the rest of its life. So I'm sort of in the predicament now that I need to replace it. And, you know, what with the ever-increasing price of power and, increased demands on a device like that, I'm looking down the barrel of potentially going down a NAS device as opposed to another Windows type box. I did build myself a 2011 server, but that won't back up a Windows 7 Enterprise box that's a domain member. So, and that's one of my requirements that I need to be able to back up my work machine and be able to get a bare metal recovery on it.
So. Yeah, so you'd asked me, and your mic might be just hitting the edge of your cheek a little bit, Andrew, so bring it out.
I shaved and everything this year.
I think you're ready to shave the second after you're done shaving.
Look, we're not going to go down the evolution path. I got told the other day that I'm one swing out of a tree, and that was by the person who sleeps next to me. So, you know, she needs to watch herself when she's asleep because
Michelle.
She has to sometime. Sleep sometime, and I'll be there.
Usually, that's the other way around. But you had asked me, I think you and I were talking about maybe using a Cronus. So if you go with a QNAP or you go with Synology or you go with a Drobo, right, none of those solutions have really great bare metal backup. So is bare metal a requirement for you, or are you just looking to back up the files?
I want something that I can replace Home Server with and just set it and forget it. And
yeah, it's a tough deal.
One of the challenges too, right, Windows Home Server version 1 goes stop support for Windows patching this year with the end of 2003 support. So, you know, being in the enterprise world, I'm more than aware of that looming, and I don't want to introduce that fault, that issue for myself at home. So, Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm between a rock and a hard place, or if I just give away the whole concept of bare metal, backup and restore, or what I need to do. I mean, if 2003 was going to hang around, then I'd find some 512 byte sector hard drives and just build myself another version one. But you know, you got to think practically and future proof.
Yeah, you know, you do for sure, and that's a dilemma. You're in the middle of a dilemma that a lot of us are in. From, you know, to be honest, a lot of people come to this, and you know, I think in most cases most people are not running Windows 7 Enterprise, right? So that's the sticky spot for you, right?
Yeah, but there are a lot of people who take home their work machine and back it up because they know that if they lose it at work, that it's gone. You know, I mean, we've got a corporate backup strategy where you can back up your data, but you know, if you ever need to recover it, you want to cross yourself three times and put your head between your knees because you need to kiss your bum goodbye.
Oh, it's good to have you back. Well, yeah, that's true. If you're doing it that way, yeah, you're kind of stuck at that point, and that's not a great. And I don't think, you know. If you talk with Rich O'Neill, you know, he swears by Acronis, and that is, you know, something he uses. It's fast. It does what it's supposed to do. It's got good cloning associated with it. I think it will do a pretty good job of bare metal. Now, it's not set it and forget it. I can't really speak to it because I haven't tried to set it up that way. But if I were going to look into another solution that way, I think Acronis is where I'd start for sure.
Yeah.
Because they do have some automated backup and such, and you get some free cloud space with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, cloud space, you know, given that bandwidth in Australia is still horrifically expensive for the average person, you know, I'm not so concerned. But yeah, and I guess you also look at then the feature sets in these devices, and you know, I'm sort of come down to QNAP and Synology, and QNAP is very, very appealing because they have Xbox Media Center built in. So then you get rid of your playback device and your TV, and you're not transcoding on the fly, and well, you're not transcoding with a third-party device and then DLNA streaming, and you know, it's hard to know. It's a Windows Home Server was a no-brainer.
Yeah, what's a QNAP? What does that run you? Have you priced those out? So you've got a TS470 Pro for the QNAP and a. You're looking at the Synology 15, 13 plus, or 15,
they're 13. They're 15, 13. They're both around the $1,300 mark before you put disk in it. So then, you know, it's gonna be $2,000 It's gonna be a $2,000 proposition by the time you put some disks in it.
Right.
And then you know you want to actually get the thing that'll actually do the job.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, I've given up on bare metal, to be honest with you. I used to think that was super important, and I just don't anymore. And part of it is I don't have a lot of configuration stuff I have to worry about. And so I for a lot of ways, I'm trying to really get away from configuring my Windows box. And the way Windows 8 is, and getting so good at bringing your profile along, Bill, you just set up a Windows 8 box, right? You're working on one right now?
Yeah, and basically I have that, and I have like the Dell Venue 8 Pro. So anything I do where, you know, goes over there. So it's nice that way. And I could see where he's in a predicament because the cloud storage is so much money. And we can just put our pictures here and have it backed up to the cloud and maybe our documents. And then we're okay. All our configuration is going to go with Windows 8 if you can take Windows 8 for that long.
Yeah. See, I can't hack Windows 8, not on a day to day.
Yeah.
It's. I'm happy to use it as my netbook where I'm sitting in front of the TV and just using a web browser, but day-to-day efficiencies as a system administrator, it just doesn't. It's not fast enough.
Yeah, Tim Black in chat says he's moved away from Home Server and has gone over to Acronis as well, and it does what it needs for him. Every time Rich clones a drive, he sends me he hits me on Skype and gloats. You know, he's like, "Hey, I just cloned this in like 15 minutes." You know, and it does. It is industrial strength. Acronis is. It does a lot of good things. I own a copy here on the studio PC, and I keep it upgraded about every 2 years just so I can kind of stay with it. But I move a lot of my data just into the cloud, and so I don't even, I mean, It's the storage is right behind me. It's sitting right behind me. But like I said, I'm not too worried about bare metal. But Andrew, yeah, you've got some thinking to do there as far as is what you want to do. I'm not sure. It sounds like a Kronos would be it's what you should look into, because that would work with any one of these NAS devices.
Yeah, yeah. I think the challenge is I need to actually get the trial version and find a storage. Yeah, whether I run up Xpanology on an Intel box and at least stand up a version of DSM. Yeah. And
well, how much? It can't be in here in the U.S. I can get on a sale. You can get a Kronos for $15-$20. Is it more expensive for you guys?
No, it's for three PC license. It's about $110.
If you go that.
And that'd do the machines that I need to. My main requirement is so that I don't want to be booting off a CD or a USB stick to do a backup. It has to be able to run as a service on the box and just be seamless.
Yeah, we talked last week, and last week's show had Tony Rayner on here with Chris Barnes. I mentioned that earlier. We talked about his 2011 box. He really likes my movies on 2011. So for him, that's one of those things that he likes and just won't live without is my movies on 2011. So that's another reason to stay with 2011 from that standpoint. Of course, again, you've got special circumstances, Andrew. So
yeah,
that.
But it also needs to be wife friendly though. But just for the extra little bit of pressure that I don't really need is there's three people at work saying, whatever you do, we're going to do it as well.
Yeah, so Tim says it does clone, but he doesn't do it consistently, has not updated to bare metal. So it's not like he's restoring bare metal all the time. So you might want to try that, test that out if you're going to go that direction. It's a little more effort to do bare metal. It's just not like, a 2012 where you just, boot to the network, find it, and restore.
That's the thing with version 1. You boot off your thing, you say, go and restore, a Morris PC, and, however many hours later, it's given it back to you at the last incremental backup. And that's the functionality, I think, that I'm looking for, and whether I can get it or not, I don't know.
Yeah. I think you're going to struggle a little bit. As you look at that QNAP, are those, how many drives fit in those, each four. One of those NAS boxes? Four?
Yeah, so the QNAP's four and the Synology's five. Yeah. And, in reality, am I ever going to use 20 terabytes a disk and drop a disk to go to 16? I don't think so. My kids, and I don't want my kids to ever have that much video sitting on a device.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the other thing. How much storage do you really need these days? Download it.
I know how much I need, and it's less than 500 gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I was quite surprised, including all the TV shows that I downloaded and everything. When I recovered my data off the old off my old box, it all fit on a 2 terabyte USB drive.
Bill, is that your case too, or how much data do you have, Bill?
I have 2 RAID 5s with pushing 18 terabyte.
But most of that's movies, right?
Yeah, no, majority of that is absolutely Blu-ray movies, yes. But
disposable content, right?
Yeah, if I lost it, I'd cry for a week or two, but I'd get over it. But the pictures, I wouldn't. That's on its own thing, and then backed up all over the place. But why don't you go? Why aren't you thinking maybe 2012 R2 Essentials, not in your wheelhouse?
Either way I go, I need new hardware because I'm running it on an old 2.8 gig Dell workstation. But the thing I don't know about 2012 yet is, will it back up my enterprise machine?
Yeah, get back to the domain issue.
Yeah, because I'm already got a machine in a domain, and Michelle's got a machine in the domain for her work as well. And version 1 doesn't care about the domain. It just goes, hey, I can see your machine, I'll back it up. 2011 doesn't do it. Just refuses to run the backup. And I haven't futzed around yet with 2012 Essentials because I don't have the horsepower to run it.
Yeah, see, that'd be a great solution for you because that's the thing everybody complains about is the domain capabilities, right? And so I think that would be. I think that'd be a great solution. You know, you got to get over the cost of it because it's the software by itself is expensive. If you try to buy it, you know, you try and buy it through the regular channels. So yeah. I've got 2012 running in a couple different places. I've got it on a test box, and then I'm running it in Azure on my, you know, as a, with an MSDN subscription. Of course, I get a $100 credit to Azure every month. And so I can run that server. I can run it for about $35 or $40 every month out there. And it's a pretty good server, single core, gig and a half of RAM on that, and 150 to 200 gig of storage. It's not enough. I need to add a bigger drive if I were going to actually use that in real time. But, you know, that's not enough. That's not a bad way. Now, it doesn't work yet to back up bare metal to an Azure, you know, a 2012 box running on Azure. That's got to be coming. They got to be thinking about that. They got to, you know, that's got to be one of those things. As I dug in a little bit deep to it, can you guys hear Sarah over there? She is just giggling away like there's no tomorrow. She knows I'm podcasting, guys. I think she does it on purpose. I'm just saying. Anyways, so 2012 on Azure is an interesting thing. I think it's still not ready for prime time, but you can blow that out to kind of what you can afford on Azure, you know. And so you can either share that or pay for it. And I don't know if is it worth paying if it was $20 or $30 a month.
Is no, it worth because it's in a U.S. data center.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, that's true. Well, no, you could get it in Asia if you wanted to.
Yeah.
They have two Asia Singapore. Locations.
I think it's Singapore, though, isn't it?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I don't think they have one in Australia yet.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll come, too. They're continually making improvements on Azure. And so,
yeah, I mean, Amazon Web Services have their virtualization service available in Sydney now. But again, you know, it's off premise. You know, who really has the faith that you want the photos of your kids sitting off mm-hmm. off premise and
yeah,
you know, that's things like that.
True. If that's the only place they sit, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're very restrictive about even putting photos of our kids on Facebook and regular social media. You know, that's why we put something up maybe once every 3 or 4 months, just because, you know. They can't protect themselves, so why wouldn't we at this stage? And there's enough in the media where people are using photos of other people's kids. Now it's becoming more and more prevalent. Anyway, I'll come up with a solution at some point in time.
No, I think it's a good... Bill, any other thoughts on that?
No, I think he's in a corner. You know, he doesn't have too many options with the bandwidth problems and the expense of cloud. So I'm kind of in the same boat. It just the complete opposite, completely, you know, because I'm going to go to 2012 and soon, and I'm running Plex, and I have all my movies. The kids' photos, though, they have to get duplicated, so, you know, in multiple places, 4 places, you know, not just 2 or 3.
Yeah, we do the same. I mean, I keep the kids' photos here, and I move them onto SkyDrive, or now I guess the OneDrive that they change it to. And Andrew, I don't have those same thoughts. Yeah. I'll move them up.
But I mean, come the day you've got grandkids, you'll be in a similar situation because you'll have that data that you don't want just anywhere.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. You're probably right. It's a good thought. It's a good thought. Well, I think one of the, what I like about when we have this discussion and you're on is we're constantly reminded, you know, we're super spoiled here in the U.S. And, you know, we got great bandwidth and it's fairly inexpensive, although it's getting more expensive. And storage is easy and even the pricing is different. I mean, we get most of our tech cheaper than you guys do. We talk about this all the time.
Oh, yeah,
like, oh no, this is way more expensive in Australia, you know. And it's just a good reminder to us here. We got it pretty good, and it's a good reminder when we're talking to our friends overseas that you can't just say, "Well, why don't you just get a copy of this?" Because sometimes getting a copy of that's not as easy.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, even hardware pricing. I mean, you guys, your market's just that much bigger than ours out here. So, you know, it's an extrapolated cost across everything we do. You know, disk costs more, the box costs more, the memory costs more. Yeah, you know, Yeah, but what's our population now? 12 million, you know, versus the, right. whatever the population is at the U.S. these days.
Well, but you're closer, though. All that stuff's made just north of you.
Yeah, but they've still got to get it here.
Yeah, I know. It's stupidly, it probably goes to the United States first and then comes back.
Yeah, don't get me.
Just like your net traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, oh, don't say that.
22 million our population now. Actually.
22. Oh, that's pretty good. But that, yeah, it's definitely economy of scale for you guys. So it's just a good reminder to for us that we can't always be careful what we recommend, especially in our communities, because we don't. In the tech communities, as we talk online, we kind of forget, you know, we're all one big community. And folks from the UK and Australia, a little more expensive for those things. It's a good, it's a good reminder. Bill, let's talk a little bit about, and I have no idea what this first line means.
Great.
So what is that version? Is that a version of Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, so basically it's a Raspberry Pi. I had another one, and my son's turning into quite the Star Wars geek. So I said, you know, instead of playing these games on the new consoles, as a kid, I used to play it on, NES, the Super NES, Genesis, you name it, Atari 2600, all these games and all these ROMs. And I started looking around, and I hit on one you can make with the Raspberry Pi. Plug it into a HDMI to one of the monitors, and I have an NES controller, USB controller they make now. And you plug it in, and if you made a case for it, you swear you had a whole big arcade, throwback arcade. It's fantastic. I mean, I use it for, you name the game that you used to play, from Saxon to, Donkey Kong to whatever it may be. And he plays it every day.
And so do they pronounce it MAME or M-A-M-E? It stands for Multiple Arcade Machine Emulator.
Right, and a lot of people would use that for Windows or Linux, the MAME, basically the emulator. And now they made an actual operating system to go on to the Pi. So you just load it up, and you're ready to go. You just load up your ROMs with it. It's ready to start up. It's fantastic.
And it just has a bunch of games already preloaded in that?
No, that would be illegal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
no.
Yeah.
So you would have to actually find a way.
Oh, so you find them and then put them on the...
My cousin, who's not around anymore, he left them to me. But no, you would find the ROMs, honestly. A lot of them are like public domain now. But
yeah, I was going to say,
ROMs,
some of those old games have been, I mean, they got to be in the public domain by this time.
Atari Pitfall in the old days. I mean, just the silly things. You're like, did I really play this 8-bit junk?
Yeah. Was it Space Invaders? No. What was the one where it was on a big screen and you had the trackball?
Track and field, my friend.
And no, you had Missile Command.
Oh, Missile Command, yeah.
Missile Command. Yeah, that was all that's awesome. Yeah. I love that one. That was an awesome arcade. You can get that. So I assume, can you set up trackball to it as well for gaming?
You can configure anything. It's built off of the main Linux, so you have all the configurations you would really want. The best place to go for information on that is obviously going to be YouTube. It'll take you right from the beginning to end on how to set this up and customize it the way you want, from cover art to controllers. And the tedious part is that for each game you have to set your controller up in the config file, but there are config files already pre-compiled for you. You don't have to go and do it manually anymore. So it's really good. I don't want to go deep into it, but just for someone who's interested in not building a whole computer for it, $35 Raspberry Pi, a big SSD card, and a $8 NES controller.
When you say a big SSD card, what are you using?
I have to go look, but honestly, I think it's a 64.
And you're just talking the one
yes.
of the regular cards for the camera.
Yeah, that's what I meant. SD card, not SSD card. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
And those aren't terribly expensive either right now, are they?
They're dirt cheap. Yeah, you think about it, yeah.
So $100, you're in for this, and then did you build a cabinet, or are you just playing it on a monitor with a joystick?
I got the case with the little clear case right now. We're testing it, making sure it's kid-proof, and then I got a 26-inch Asus monitor that we're using, and with just the NES2 the NES USB controller, and we're testing it that way. And then maybe I might build it out and, you know, get out the plywood and make some nice graph.
Would you do a full cabinet?
Hell yeah. Yeah, you'd have to go that way.
Yeah.
That's the only way to roll.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that for us that grew up in the 80s and the 90s with the arcades.
Yeah. But could you imagine having this big cabinet and you open it up and it's just a little LCD monitor and this little pie inside?
Well, back in the day, you know, honestly, back in the day, those boards weren't all that big that ran that stuff. They were bigger, but those cabinets were, yeah, and they were mostly just to keep. To collect the coins.
And the monitor, that's it, yep.
Oh, the monitor was huge. Yeah.
They typically had an Atari and Amiga sitting inside them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you don't have to, the average person doesn't have to be afraid of this if they don't understand all of it. You know, you can go on YouTube and walk it from beginning to end and go right through everything. It's really an easy project. It's fun, too.
Yeah, no, it'd be great fun. I'd love to. I've got a 21-inch monitor that I just fired up the other day, a 21-inch tube monitor, right, that's out in the garage that I fired up the other day. I'm like, I wonder if this thing's still working. And pretty soon it's going to charge. It's going to cost me an arm and a leg to get rid of that thing, right, from a recycle standpoint. But I often thought that would make an awesome cabinet monitor, you know, build it in a platform and put that thing in there. And then, you know, build out a deck, and you could have the scroll and the joystick. Are you using? So you're using a joystick. Is that a new joystick, or did you go retro?
I'm using here. I'll
show you. Yeah, grab it.
It's like an NES controller.
How's the hunting going, Bill?
Like cute there. Yeah, I'm going koala hunting soon.
Yeah, it looks like you're going out after a few deer or bear or something.
I like that saying. I think I saw it on Facebook. It said, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, except bears. They'll just kill you." Okay, so hold on. Let me focus on so we can see you. Okay,
my camera's horrific, sorry.
Oh, okay. So, old school.
So that's old school. Yeah, it's not old school, but it's right. The Super NES controller. You can get an iBuffalo on eBay with a USB connector to go into the hub on the Pi. I think for two controls, I think it costs like $12, $18 at most. That with the SSD card, you don't have to SD card. You don't have to have the biggest card. You can start small. And you can be in. You can be ready to go for under $100.
And it's USB on the end there. Show that again.
Yep.
Okay.
Just USB. It's not the old style. They converted it. You know, obviously.
Yeah.
But it works great. And but again, once we move up and the test is over, I'm gonna go get the trackball with all the buttons and the old school buttons. You know that you got that. You can't miss that feel if you're from the 80s or 90s. That feel those buttons in the arcade games.
Commodore 64 joystick.
Yeah, that's the. That was horrific.
Well, remember the Atari, was it a 2600?
Beating on this thing needs to take.
It's amazing, that stuff. I mean, it had to be built so well, because we just beat the crap out of those controllers.
Throw
them at the TV and stuff.
Yeah. The Atari ones, awesome. You pull the rubber off of them. And,
I know. Our kids have no idea.
No.
They just have no idea. Not any at all. Yeah, well, I'd love to get the big cabinet and then build a big deck on the front of it that had multiple, you know, that have multiple inputs to be able to work with. And maybe even a keyboard you'd slide out if you needed to do, you know, a little keyboard.
It's good to have, too, especially when you want to do the updates to the operating system and to the overlay. You just do, you know, an apt-get update and let it run, but you do need a keyboard to do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you'd want that handy. You'd want it nearby. Yep. To be able to get that done. That's kind of cool.
It's neat.
On your Pi, are you so it's only got one USB port, so do you have a hub on there to take some of the other imports? Or
yeah, actually the 512 has two hubs.
Oh,
okay. I mean two USB ports, but on off the one port, yes, I do have the powered hub on there. So if I do need to, because I need the keyboard, obviously, keyboard, mouse, if you need to, you could boot into X Windows. It's kind of real limited and slow, obviously, with the Pi. But if you had to get something done graphically, you could do it that way without the command line.
Yeah. We haven't, you know, Raspberry Pi has, it started with a splash, and then it's gone really underground.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a really vibrant community. They're just not very vocal.
No.
You know? It's no. But there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, obviously, all this stuff that you're talking about wasn't around a year ago, and I was talking with John Zadler about the Raspberry Pi, and it's all been the stuff developed kind of behind the scenes. It's a real quiet community.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, just think, I had a God forbid, a Mac Mini running my weather station, and that was sucking down some crazy power. I got a Pi running dedicated just to report that to NOAA and Weather Underground. So I'm saving so much wattage now.
Oh, yeah, those, because it's, what, five, maybe?
Sipping, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, so something less. And then what's the OS? So what are you running to run the weather station? What's that run?
It's an actual Linux program. WEEXV is the actual name of it. It's okay. A real good name to remember. But it works, and it works great. And, you know, it works again. It's on top of running the Debian for the Raspberry Pi, and it just works. I haven't touched it in 6 months since I had it working. Wow. Just leave it alone.
Yeah. Just hums along. And speaking of that, did you get the nasty weather that you thought you were going to get yesterday?
No, we did get it. A lot of trees down. And
really?
And, yeah, just because everything was so heavy from the last storm, and then we got more ice, and it wasn't as bad as we thought, but still not great. I still didn't test my generator out yet, though.
So, I know. You're just hoping the power goes out.
God,
at this point.
It goes off every Wednesday to test, you know, and I'm like, did the power go out? And they're like, oh, no. It just...
So it's got a routine. So talk a little bit. What generator did you put in there? Not everybody knows.
So, yeah, sorry. I have the Generac Gas NLP version. It's a 20-something or other. There's a 17 and a 24. So I have the bigger one, a 24. And we had so many power outages, and after the hurricane, and we got hit dead on, I was like, enough. I can't go with fighting fuel lines anymore. And if you never know what pandemonium total anarchy is, it's when people are fighting for fuel or food. And it was horrible. So I said, enough of this. And we got that installed. And just haven't had a chance to. It's got an automatic transfer switch, so the power goes out. It switches over to the generator. Within 10 seconds, you're back up and running. I just put battery backups on everything so it can handle that 10-second maybe drop, especially for the high-dollar electronics. And I'm just waiting to try it. Now that I have it, nothing goes wrong.
We could come out and start like a fire by the telephone or by the power pole so it burned down, and then you'd lose your power, and then...
That'd be fine for me.
Yeah, you're gonna be celebrating.
Yeah, I'll be the happiest guy in the world. Then all my neighbors be over.
The generator started. You'll be the only. You know, you'll be running. You should get some Christmas lights that are just plugged into the generator.
Just to rub it into their face. During the hurricane, I kid you not, I had the generator pulled out of my race car trailer, and I was back feeding the house. So I was on the block. I was the only one with power, refrigerator, and heat. I had neighbors coming over with their cell phones, with their wires. Could you please, sir, could you please plug this in for a few minutes of power? You know? I said, what's the difference? The cell phone towers have been dead for 3 to 5 days. You're not, even if you get your cell phone charged, they can work.
That's hilarious. Well, but you were the good neighbor, right?
No, heck no. I told him, you got to bring a loaf of bread and eggs, and I'll do that.
Like trading like it's anarchy.
Yeah,
it's
the barter, end of the earth. Barter economy. Nothing wrong with that.
Guess it, barter. Old school. Yeah.
Want a dozen eggs, bring them over. You get nothing until I get a dozen eggs. That's awesome.
It's all good, though. Neighbors are good.
That's awesome. But that's good home tech. You know, when we talk about, I mean, that, I think that's one of those things I think we'll eventually move to. You know, Andrew, we talked about this in the pre-show, but Andrew, talk a little bit about, you know, you're generating solar power at this point. You've had those up there now for 2 years. Is that...
Oh, no, it's longer than that. It's only three, I think.
It's been almost three? Was it when we first started the show? Maybe it was.
Yeah, it was very close to when we first started. Let's see, I think we're... So I started tracking it pretty much within a couple of days of... this is the third year they've been in. So we've generated, 2.5, 5.5, 6, 1, 8, 1...
A lot.
And 12.5. We've generated about 12.5 megawatts of power, and we've exported about 5.5 megawatts.
Hmm.
Megawatt hours. Sorry.
Yeah. So about half, right? Of what? Well, a little under half of what you've created.
About a third. About a third to a half. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've fed in probably around about $3,500 worth to the grid, the system is scheduled to pay itself off around about August this year.
Cool. Oh, okay. So you're already that close to.
Yeah.
Because I'd asked what your ROI was on that a couple of years ago, and you thought you'd 3, 4, 5 years have that thing paid for pretty much.
Yeah. So given the increase in carbon-based energy pricing, it's going to be this year at some stage.
Yeah.
Which we're pretty happy with that. For a 12 grand investment to pay itself off in 3 and a bit years, that's pretty good.
Two questions, if you don't mind. On that, if the power goes out, I know a lot of people that do have the solar here, they keep
batteries. It's useless.
No, when the power goes out, I mean, you don't keep batteries with an AC, DC converter in the house? Okay.
The system we got here is, although the system we've got installed, if we lose the grid, it doesn't feed. So the inverters do get a degree of their run power from the grid. So if the grid goes down, the inverters turn off.
Okay.
Which is unfortunate. I mean, we had rolling blackouts here a few weeks ago because of the heat and all the people running their AC during the night and whatnot. As a result, if the inverters would power the house, we'd be okay. But yeah, the grid was down. To put an off-grid system in, given how many panels we've got, we'd probably need almost a single car garage worth of batteries to be able to absorb the power.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Which is why we've done it the way we've done it.
Well, batteries, they're expensive, and you got to replace them often, and they're not that great for the environment. It's kind of a catch 22 with those,
especially if you have a Honda hybrid too,
I knew that day was coming.
it's way too much lithium in those things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh man, it's well, we get Canadian Geek on here. It was not Canadian Geek.
The environmental cost of manufacturing that car, Jim.
Yeah,
I know. It's probably I wouldn't buy another one of those again. I'll just be honest with you.
Just go and get yourself a stonking V8. I mean, the cost of fuel in America is still low enough that you can.
I know, that's all. We basically pour it down the street and just light it on fire.
Yeah,
I've seen that. Yeah.
That's how we clear snow now. Is the truck sprays gasoline and we just light it on fire.
Actually, he stops and asks what grade first.
If we're feeling really smug, we use premium.
He lights it with 100 and off it goes.
Wouldn't that be an awesome world? Oh man. What about so Bill, you'd also been working on OpenVPN off your pfSense router. I haven't messed with that at all. What are you trying to get out of that, and why are you messing with it?
You know, it the real reason is honestly because I didn't want to open all the ports in my firewall when I was doing pfSense. So I said, let me try VPN. And I want to be able to access my home automation because sometimes a light will stay on. It doesn't get the signal or something goes on. So as my wife leaves, she goes, oh, by the way, this light was on. And I didn't want to blow open three holes. And I don't want to have the security issue. So I VPN, I wanted to VPN in, and that was the best solution with pfSense. And I found it to be pretty damn easy.
Is it just enabling? So you go to pfSense, you enable, what are we going into? We're going into the VPN. Yeah, because there's, so the VPN tab and then OpenVPN.
It's going to ask you OpenVPN, and then you have to build your users. You got to build your cert. And it will, when you're done with all of it, again, YouTube has been a great resource for me with that, but when you're done with it, you can export a EXE for Windows. You can export configurations for Android and iOS. And you can full configurations for any Linux or Nix type system. So and obviously what do they call that? OS X.
Yeah, Mac. Right.
That operating system no one uses, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I do. Sorry.
But that's a pretty easy setup, huh?
It is, once you understand what they're trying to do. And the whole thing with as you notice with pfSense and OpenVPN is they have it set up where everything's naming. You're naming not only your users, but your naming, your NIC card, and the port. So everything, once you get past that part where it doesn't make any sense, and it's like, oh, I'm naming this process, and then I'm combining with this other naming process, it kind of comes together. The PSense cookbook has been a fantastic resource for me as well.
PSense cookbook, huh?
Yeah, let me just...
If you're new to the show, maybe you've just been listening to us for the last couple weeks or whatever, PFSense, you just Google that. It sounds just like it is, PFSense. It's a type of router that you can have in your... You can build in your house. Use a spare PC. I was talking to somebody this week. Oh, it was Rich O'Neill. He'd gotten a D525, an Atom D525 back from his daughter's place. And he's like, man, what can you do with this? And that... You don't want to put any server software on that thing because it'll just puke. But it runs PFSense dynamite, and so that's. I would look if I were going to build a PFSense router. I would look for one of those old Atom chips and try and get them for just dirt cheap. You got to be able to get that chip for like $5 on eBay or something.
Yeah, I would like to drop down to watch because I'm using an N40L just for that. I didn't virtualize it.
Work.
It's still sucking down like 30-ish.
Really?
Maybe 28, 30. I remember checking it out. So
yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what yours is doing?
13 maybe, 12, 13, I think is what it was. I'll have to double check.
That's still great.
Maybe I'll run that, yeah. It wasn't a lot. It just sips it. And, one of my kids is downloading something. Speaking of that, I'm watching, during the show, I leave the PFSense dashboard open to kind of watch what's going on the server. And so I think someone is either doing a hangout along with me, or I don't know, because it's spiking. It's just going like this.
Hard.
On the router. Yeah, that could be that too. They are those. One time, it was Saturday morning, and the kids know that I podcast now on Saturday mornings. And so Tim had gotten up, and he never gets up on Saturday mornings. And a new game had come out and been released that morning. And so he was downloading it, and he was like, hey, Dad. What time are you podcasting? Because he knows I just ride them when I'm podcasting, and they do this kind of stuff. And what time are you podcasting? I was like, 9:30, and he was like, oh, okay, well, it'll be done by then. I'm like, what are you doing? Downloading a new game. So, but that's my favorite part of PFSense is a dashboard that really allows me to see. Mike Howard's been really helpful.
Great brother is watching.
Yeah. What is your favorite dashboard? Add-on, like which ones? I have interface, system information, firewall logs, and OpenVPN.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't get that. The one I just watch is the traffic graphs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I watch those pretty. And, from an average guy perspective, when you set it up, I haven't really added much to it. The system information is really, I leave that up in the traffic graphs, and I kind of, it'll tell me what, I kind of watch the CPU usage. So that D525 for my traffic really never runs above 5%. So it's almost idling all the time, So if you're going to build a PFSense router, you would want to find an Intel chip that really idles, just sips when it idles because it just doesn't use, I think it's at 2% right now. CPU, I've got, do I get 4 gig in there? I do, or do I have two? Let me look here, 2 cores.
I'm up almost 44% right now.
Really?
Well, and I'm not sure why on my system information. And
yeah,
that's not
a lot.
That's unusual. But yeah, I block countries too. I have the country block.
I was doing that too. Yep.
I don't know where that's coming from.
My memory, yeah, I have 4 gig in there, and it's only using 4%. It's just been rock solid for me.
Yeah, mine's using 14.
Yeah,
or if that's a VPN.
But how many days? It could be. How many days since you rebooted? What's your uptime?
Not much. Mine's 22 days and change.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I had to do a reboot when I adjusted something. So I'm very interesting. I need to go take a look at that.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those things I think that's really helpful, right? If you're going to, especially if you have a really connected home and if you're listening to this, chances are you're the nerd in the family, and you're backing stuff up, and you're in charge of the network, and you want to know what's coming and going, and a PFSense router, I think, is a great way to do it. I've just been super impressed. It's been great to move everything off of, because I made the classic mistake, and we talk about this on Ask the Podcast Coach all the time, because a lot of these people have bandwidth problems, and they're using these $30 wireless routers, or what, a $50 even wireless routers that they buy at Best Buy or Staples or whatever. Insert big box store here. And those are just not really designed to handle that much traffic. And I mean, I've gone to mine before, put my hand on it, and it is hot.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, why am I having, you know, why is it dropping? And why am I not getting the download performance that I'd expect from my ISP? Well, the modem was fine. It was the, you know, I'd go from the, I would go from the modem right into the wireless router and run all the wireless traffic and all the wired traffic. And I, you know, I probably got, I mean, right now I have 2 8 ports and everything but two are filled. So, you know, I've got 14 wired connections coming in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that wireless router was trying to handle all that traffic, and I just don't think the CPU in there is powerful enough to do that kind of stuff.
No, no, definitely. Just definitely gives you a lot of headroom when you do it that way. It would make sense.
Yeah, and I, you know what? I haven't, Ken asked me from chat, do I need to do any traffic shaping? And I don't. I don't need to. No. I could, but I don't. Just changing over to the router was good enough for me. Just having it manage all my traffic has been good enough for me. It has really, I've really never had any traffic problems since. I don't, you know, so Ken asked me, what other packages do I run? I really don't run that many on mine. I don't know about you. In fact, right now in my configuration, you know what? I reset this a while back. So you were talking about blocking countries, and I never put any packages back in. And so I'm not, I guess I'm not blocking Russia and Iraq and, you know, those countries that you can block. So right now I'm running none.
And you're definitely not blocking Australia.
Definitely not. Oh. Although I'm gonna work on that right after the show here.
Yeah, snort. That's what I'm doing. Snort.
I'd be tempted to do it.
Melbourne, block down. we'll get Brisbane while we're at it.
Yeah. I'll start with Brisbane.
Yeah, so Drashna said I need a 16-port managed switch. Yeah. Yeah, I could do that, and I could pay for that, or I could buy, you know, I bought 2 8-port switches that are, they're dumb, you know, they're not managed, and they do great. And I, you know, I actually run, I've got them separated for my stuff goes into one, so I know that I keep the traffic, that the heavy traffic is all on one, and then the stuff around the rest of the house is on the other, and so if it's got to jump from one switch to the other, in most cases, it's not having to jump switches. So it's just, it all stays on, most of the traffic stays on one switch. And so it's been great. It works for me. And then the other thing I did is I, you know, right off to the side here, I've got a wall of, you know, it's a pegboard wall. And we, Sarah keeps some stuff on it, but I have half of it. And I just mounted, like I took the router and I got some of that plastic pipe. You know, you can, it's got holes all along the, and you just cut that and drill it, you know, just mount it right to the wall. And so everything's flat up against the wall where I can see it. You know, the cables are organized, and I can get right to it if I need it. And it's not sitting on the shelf.
You sure you're an IT guy?
I'm not really. I just stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
I was going to say, that makes me feel really shameful. the only tidy bit of the cabling in my entire house is a bit underneath it where it's all clipped under the joists.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I like it to be neat if I can, because I've got so much crap on my, you know, I think about all the hardware I got on my desk right now, you know, and it's just like, I got to keep some track of it, so, you know, I got, the crap we have, so that is, the switches are up there, the HD home runs are up there, I've got two of those, you know, I've screwed a few, why can't I think of it? You know, which the power strips. I've mounted a few of those up there.
I could never get the HD home run to work. It would not work in my house.
Oh, that's right.
So I took the bastard of a thing back.
You really gave that a good run too. We talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
When we were struggling with it.
Yeah, I love that.
They've got to be the most unreliable piece of crap I've ever come across. That device. But at least the ones they sell in Australia.
So yeah. Well, you know who makes them. The Ken was asking in chat a good recommendation on an 8-port switch. I have two of these. The Zycel, I don't know if that's how you really pronounce it, Z-Y-X-E-L. And I've gotten these both on Amazon and I think Newegg as well. The one in particular that I have is a GS10 or GS108B, gigabit Ethernet. Comes in a, you know, I got two of these. I think I paid $30 for these. Been a great 8-port switch for sure. So I'll throw a link to that out in chat or out in the show notes as well. But this has been, I think this was a BYOB recommendation in its day, and I just picked it up, and it's been, oops.
It was what?
Something just fell off my desk.
That brand, they used to, a lot of the ISPs out here used to use their ADSL modems.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people have had those running for, you know, 7, 8, 9 years and still going strong. So they definitely got the market cred.
Well, and they weren't terribly expensive. They have some, when you're not using them, they kind of shut down. Their advertise is kind of green and power saving. Yeah. And I've had, you know, I bought one and I filled it up and I bought another. And I think at this point, I still have two open ports on those. And if I needed a third, I would probably buy another one just like it. And just stack those up, you know. I haven't seen any degradation in my network performance because of that. And it's actually a great way to segregate out the network on the at the house, you know. And I get, like I said, all my equipment goes into one because that's where, you know, I'm moving data around mostly between that. And then the rest of the house is on the second one. And then wireless is all by itself. So that to wrap up that story. I've got two other things that are plugged into it, but they're really low power. But wireless, because we have so much wireless gear in the house, you know, there's five phones that connect. There's three laptops that do that as well, and then just a host of other things. And it's really helped. I've gotten a better wireless signal too, out of it. So,
do you only run the one access point?
I just do run the one. Yeah, our house is small enough that I don't have any signal problems. In fact, I've run my laptop off the desk or off the deck, as seen in the video from this summer when I was working on the deck during the 4th of July. I took the laptop out there and ran it off the deck and worked just great. Now, to be fair, the deck is really close to me right here. I mean, there's a wall and then there's the deck, so it doesn't have to go through much to get there. There's a concrete wall, though. So, but it does pretty well. And it's one of those, the D-Link, they were selling these things. It was a refurb, and it was like $30, and it was cheap. And I forget the 266 something, 266? No, 166? Oh, shoot, I'll have to look that up. Hold on.
You're telling the story.
It's right here. I can just grab the box.
You and your box.
Here's a box I prepared earlier.
Yeah, 615, that's what it is, the D-Link 615. Oh, yeah. This little workhorse, and you know, not a great whole house router, to be honest with you. You don't want to be running everything in your house through this, but a really good access point, and it's just been really good for me. So it's kind of sick that I could just pull that off the shelf. I try to keep as many boxes as I can, because you just don't know when you're gonna have to ship them back or when you're gonna need an example on the podcast. So. All right. Well, let's, guys. We're at about the 120 mark. Anything else that you'd like to get in? I think we covered the show notes there. Anything else? All right. I'll take that as a resounding no.
Did I tell you I've got a new car?
Yeah. No. What did you get? Because you wrecked one. Is this a new one, or is this the one since?
Yeah.
It was new.
Where are we? Let's see. How do I throw?
Share your screen.
Green arrow?
Yep, green arrow. Right. And I'll go full screen on you. And make sure if it's got any cool tech in it, we want to hear about that too.
Well, it's got I ended up with a dashboard camera in it. I ended up with a Volkswagen Amarok, which is Volkswagen's pickup out here in in all parts of the world other than North America and Canada. I've got a canopy on the back of it. And the cool tech that I got, and I bought myself a dashboard camera because the insurance company, when I had my accident, told me that I was at fault, despite the fact that somebody hit me. So I went down the path of getting a dash cam, which gives me the ability to do 1080p. Sorry, I'm just trying to find a photo.
How much? Because you can't record everything. So how long?
That records in 3-minute chunks. Does audio from inside the car. It does audio from inside the car. It does 1080p, 720p at 60 or 30 frames a second. Auto starts, auto stops, and I can connect to it with the mobile phone via Wi-Fi.
How much extra was that?
It's an aftermarket thing. It cost me $230, I think.
That's not too bad. Insurance fraud has gotten so bad in Russia that everybody has a dashboard cam on their vehicles in Russia. That's like mandatory. You have to have them. I'm surprised they haven't become more popular here in the United States, to be honest. With all the Go cams that we've got on our helmets and all the crazy stuff we do, I've been really surprised the U.S. this hasn't caught on in the U.S.
Yeah, with the GoPros and the like.
GoPro. Yeah. I'm surprised.
That's a sensational marketing campaign. Those guys operate.
Yeah. No, it's been awesome, but. It has surprised me that we have not seen this. Because Americans are we're the perfect market for that kind of thing. Everybody have a dashboard cam, and I don't see many of them. I haven't seen Bill. Have you seen you work in that industry? Do you see them installed a lot in vehicles?
No, but this is the first. No, I shouldn't say first year, but the first. Two quarters where I see customers that have to take them out of their cars. So maybe not many, but probably three or four I've seen use it now just for that reason. I know people that actually put it on their bicycle, so when they drive, they get hit. They have something on their bike. Yeah, it's just kind of weird. You know, they're not off-road bicycle. You know, they're just, if they get hit, they have something on their bicycle. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it looks like a Nissan.
Yeah, I believe they're code-sharing with Nissan on a seven-seater in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what I ended up in. It's like a little bit bigger than the Subaru that I used to have. But
one engine. Oh, look at the guys. You're gonna get in trouble.
Corporate spam. And that's a dash cam. That's the dash cam I ended up with.
Cool.
So nice stealthy little install. The only you can see about three inches of wiring for the whole car the way I've installed it.
That's not how I see them here. I see just a big GoPro suction cup to the window.
Oh, no, you got to do it right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
Look, I mean, we run one in each car now. There's one in Michelle's car for the same reason. She's in traffic a lot. You know, we all know what the idiots are like when you're out on the road these days. Mm-hmm. No one's got any respect for anyone else. And
well, what's interesting is I think we're being forced into them, or you're being forced into them, not because, well, obviously because of the crazy drivers, but insurance companies are coming down hard saying, no, you know, the other insurance company is saying, no, it was your fault, not our drivers. There's such downward pressure on the fiscal responsibilities of it that you're now having to prove it, right? And so I don't think it's long before it becomes a standard item. I mean, I think this is one of those areas where the U.S. is trailing and the rest of the world a lot. Like I said, I see them in a lot of other countries. They have them, especially where the driving is crazier, right? I mean, can you imagine a car cam in a car in India?
No.
Oh, my God. That would be awesome. Those guys are crazy.
YouTube winners every week.
Oh, man. That is a crazy driving country for sure. So it's
I drove in India when we were over there, and it's an interesting experience.
Yeah. Andrew, where's the storage then for that? Is it actually on the camera, or does it go somewhere else in the car?
Yeah, it's got a 32 gig micro SD card in the.
Okay, and it's just constantly writing to that. It's just constantly writing to that card, and then Does it tell you if that card errors out and starts?
Yeah, so if you get it talks to you. So when you start the car, it comes up and tells you the system's loading and when the recording starts. And if the card corrupts itself, it'll tell you that the card's become corrupted and that it's stopped recording. And then it's got, I think it's got a lane departure warning system in it too. So you set the front of the car in one and you set the artificial horizon with the other. So not dissimilar to that. So as it picks up the slew, a gradual slew between the artificial horizon and the bonnet of the car, it'll tell you that you're about to change lanes. If you're not doing it in what it deems to be the right time sequence.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't got that turned on because I think it's an unnecessary gimmick.
Yeah, well, that's like turning on your speed. You know, if you have a Lumia phone and you're using the maps, the Lumia maps that are on there, there's a speed there's a speed option, and it will tell you if you're going too fast and doot. Yeah. And after a while,
and you're gonna sit there and look at it and go, I know I'm going too fast.
I hate that.
Yeah,
that's why I just got a ticket.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes those warnings can be a little over the top. You know, it is helpful though. So, all right, guys. Well, very cool, Andrew. Congratulations on the new vehicle. That's cool. I think again for our U.S. audience, that's a pretty. That's still a pretty foreign concept to have that camera in there, but I think they're coming. I think maybe in the next 5 years we're going to see more of them.
And look, yeah, you can pick them up on eBay and sites like ChinaVasion for something that's got GPS in it and does all the, you know, so it'll tell you your current speed. This one doesn't have GPS, but it'll tell you GPS location, it'll tell you speed, it'll tell you all that other good stuff, give you a 1080p recording. And pick them up for $30-$40.
Oh, that's not bad.
And from an insurance perspective, if you know someone cuts you off and leaves you no option, and you know the insurance companies deem you in the wrong because of the road rule, well, you know, there's my memory card. Have a look at it for yourself. 9 times out of 10, you're going to get off.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know what would be great on one of those things is if they had a swivel head, like you could put one on the inside that would, somebody in chat was saying earlier, you know, a kid cam, one that would show the kids goofing off in the back. But I would think a motion sensitive cam in there that, you know, if somebody gives you that door ding, you know, it would come on or it might be a proximity sensor. So if you park in a parking lot and somebody pulls up within or comes within 5 feet of the car, it turns on and starts monitoring until, you know, and again, it's only going to keep certain footage of that, but that's like a security, you know, kind of a security sensor for your house, you know, same kind of idea.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Look, I've fought it for a long time getting something like that. And, it wasn't until, you know, I was deemed to be at fault for an accident that wasn't my fault. That it sort of forced my hand. You know, my old car had $26,500 worth of damage to it, so.
Right.
You know, it was just a small love tap from a four-wheel drive, so.
Yeah, but you got hit from behind, right?
No, I got hit in the side of the car.
Oh, was it side? Okay.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, the cars really are made to get hit from front and back.
Oh, yeah.
Although it's getting better on the side, right? There's a lot of safety features from the side, too.
Yeah, true.
Well, let's wrap it, guys. Thanks for coming on. We'll stay around for the post show as well. We've got, I'm sure we'll come up with a few things to chat about. I've got a 6 o'clock flight tomorrow morning. Got to be at the airport in time for a 6 o'clock flight tomorrow morning. So start backing up the numbers. And I haven't even unpacked from today. So we won't spend too much time in the post show. I got to get up there, unpack, and get ready for tomorrow. Long day in Dallas. So I don't think anybody listening tonight's in the Dallas area. Wouldn't matter anyways. I'm busy all day, but it's good to have you out here tonight, guys. Thanks for coming out, Andrew. Thank you, and Bill. Thanks for. It's good to see both of you. We'll have to not make it so long before we do this.
Oh, no.
I appreciate it, and not forgetting who I am.
No way. We will get back on schedule as we get as we roll out Home Gadget Geeks, we'll be changing the format a little bit, just a smidge. And of course, we'll get you guys back on again. And it's just great to have both of you. I'll remind you, as I did in the beginning of the show, we've got the new Cyber Frontiers. That's Christian's new podcast that's coming out. I actually have one in the hopper. We're just waiting to mix it and put. I got to add some music to it and get some album art going into it. We don't actually have that done yet, so I need to get that done. But coming out, Cyber Frontiers, we talk about cybersecurity and big data. It's actually pretty interesting. The first show is really Christian setting the framework, the groundwork for everything he's going to talk about here in the future. So if you want to listen to that, and if you're listening to this early in the week, it still may not be out yet, but watch for that. Cyber Frontiers coming on The Average Guy. .tv. Thanks again for the Tech Scholarship Fund stuff. If you buy from Amazon, it really works for us, and we turn that around. I've got some cash right now that I could spend on guys that want to do reviews on tech items. Just requires
I'll review a NAS for you.
Yeah, I don't have that much. I checked. I don't have that much. and the shipping is just atrocious to you. That's the
Well, Amazon Australia only ship Kindle books.
Yeah. That's too bad.
So pick the cost of your distribution in Australia.
Right. I'll send you a Kindle book, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, there you go. and so if you're interested in reviewing something for us, we try and keep it around $100, and keep it relevant to the community, you can review that and then I let you keep it. So not a bad way to get that done. A reminder that Ask the Podcast Coach, I do that every Saturday morning, 9:30. And actually, if you're interested in seeing what I do for Gallup, you know, in that Gallup podcast, we get about 300 or 400 live on Fridays. That's actually tomorrow. So if you're listening live, you can catch us tomorrow at noon Central. I'll be doing the remote from Dallas. So I'll be coming in, and I've got I have a Verizon. I'm going to try this. I don't know how well this is going to work, but I got a Verizon hotspot that I'm going to connect to, and I won't be on the podcast. I'm just going to run it for them. But if you go to coaching.gallup.com, and if you want to see what I do for a full-time job, podcasting is now a part of that. So coaching.gallup.com, and you can go out there, and we got a program called Call to Coach. I haven't talked about it too much here, but an opportunity if you're, we're doing some cool stuff around Strength and Strengths Finder, and if you want to go out and take a peek at that, you can do that as well. All right, we're out here every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. If you haven't joined us live in the past, you might want to try it one time. It's good to have you out. We've got quite a few guys in chat. I want to thank the chat room as well. We had a great chat session tonight out there. Chat wing changed a few things this week and the way things look, the look and feel, and they've added some features. So definitely worth a look. If you want to check out our chat wing page, you can go out to theaverageguy.tv/chat, and that just has a chat on it. Come back and join us again. Good night, everybody.